Welcome to episode 27 of the Payments Show podcast. This show helps businesses learn about fast digital payment technologies and platforms. I'm your host, Satwant Full, and in this episode, I will be speaking to Martino Aragao from Utrust, which is a cryptocurrency payment platform that allows merchants to accept digital currencies both online and offline. Enjoy the episode. Martino, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic to have you on. Where are you joining us from?
So I'm in Braga, which is a city in the north of Portugal.
Nice. How is the weather there right now?
Actually, surprisingly sunny, considering that we are in a week that was predicted to be entirely rainy. And this is often considered to be the rainiest city in Portugal, which for comparison, according to Wikipedia, it rains three times the same amount of water as in London.
That's a pretty big achievement, actually. Nice. I'll have to get to Portugal one day. It's one of the places I haven't been, but I've heard good things. I've heard the food is amazing.
Yeah, the food is marvelous.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining. As I said earlier, I've been looking forward to this one. So Martino is the head of product at Utrust, and Utrust helps merchants easily accept digital currencies for goods and helps buyers pay for them, quite simply. But there's a lot to talk about the platform, as it's a very rich platform from what I've read into. I'm looking forward to going into the detail of that. Before we start, just tell us a bit about yourself and how long you've been at Utrust and how you got there.
So I started a degree in software engineering and ended up working in a traditional bank on a summer internship in marketing, not in software engineering. And that short experience made me realize how outdated and slow banks are. And it's especially interesting considering that that bank was part of one of those new age banks, which is very digital facing and for the young people. And still the process was terrible, particularly QA. I remember QA, we were testing the updates of a version that was five times behind. So we were testing something that was 6 months old. So I started in this software engineering and ended up noticing that what I really like to do is combine that with the product management, so building solutions and thinking about those solutions. And that's how I ended up arriving to Utrust 2 years ago in the summer of 2018. And since then, raised up to become the head of product.
Excellent. Interestingly, how does Portugal, in terms of the government and the financial regulators, how do they view crypto at the moment?
So it is actually something that is accepted in the way that we don't pay taxes right now for investments in crypto. It is likely something that would change. It is a way for sure to bring in more investment. There is still a lot of need to become more stable in that compliance area. And usually what happens is that, from my understanding as well, is that Portugal ends up applying the laws that are done on a European basis within 1 year, 2 years time frame, basically.
Okay. Well, for the meantime, probably a good place to be if there's no taxes on crypto. When the flights open up, I might head there myself then. So you've been at Utrust for a couple of years. It'll be interesting to hear about the story, especially from your perspective as you're so new, how Utrust came about and sort of why it was founded and the story around it.
Sure. It is interesting because even though 2 years seems such a short time, 2 years ago, there was no product. We only went live 1 year ago. The story started in the end of 2017 through an ICO. But before we get into the ICO, I will talk about one of our founders, Nuno. Nuno was the first CEO. He's still a very, very active person in everything that we do. What happened was that, putting it simply, he got scammed when he tried to buy a trip with Bitcoin, because there was no payment system that would back him. So he went to a website, he tried to buy a trip, and nothing happened. That's how Utrust came to be. So it was the solution that in the stable area in fiat, so when we talk about traditional currencies, you have that. You have that from your bank, you have that from Visa, you have that from PayPal, from Stripe. You have different ways of getting protected. In crypto, there was nothing. And so Utrust started, precisely the name points to that, was to have a way of being able to do payments in a simple way, but in a trusted way. A way that would back you in case something happened, and that would ensure that you would not get scammed. That's why at the end of 2017, an ICO was done to build this payment system. And last year, around June 2019, we went live with our first product.
Like all of the best products, it starts from a problem that the founder wanted to solve. That's a great story. I didn't realize that. And now it makes sense as to why one of the features you've launched or you're launching is UTrust Personal, which is buyer protection. My guess is that's where that's come from, is that problem that he had initially.
Yeah, so buyer protection has always been something that we pointed out in our white paper. And there's many ways and layers of doing that protection. So the part of having a way to the personal, the refund system, there's many different things that we can do to enhance this experience. One of them is actually more with our customer support. So how we deal with requests and what we're able to do to try to solve that.
One of the benefits of accepting cryptocurrency and using a cryptocurrency payment gateway is that you eliminate fraudulent chargebacks. But for a business that's maybe not so, what's the word, legit or a bit shady, that's actually very attractive. So how does it work? Let's say I buy something and you had the problem that your founder had. If he had that problem on this platform, what's the process of getting that money back? And does the merchant have to pay, or how does it work?
It comes with a lot of layers. So when we consider the situation that happened with Nunu at that time, it was that he went to a website and he sent crypto to an address that was handled by them. So when we consider our current platform, it doesn't happen like that. So the first thing that will need to happen is that one way or another, before the merchant gets his money, so before he's able to receive payouts, he will need to pass through KYB. So we'll need to verify his documentation. We'll need to find that it's a legit business. So even though we can accept, and we can go into that more detail later, but even though we can start accepting payments, you will not get paid until we are able to identify that it's a legit business. So until that happens, the money is on our side, so we can deliver it back to the users. Just by having this security layer, we're actually blocking and handling a lot of that issue, of the issues with not legit merchants that try to scam people. Secondly, as well, the way that we try to filter and some other regulations that we do in order to tackle in terms of that KYB. But if anything were to happen, what would be the way for the buyer would be to contact our support team, and we would, with that information, we would do everything possible to ensure that you would have the best experience possible. So we so far have not had any situations directly associated with scams, because our list of merchants that is verified is legit businesses. But we've had other situations of concerns, issues, people sending the wrong currency or not wanting to buy that item. And sometimes we deal directly with the merchant when we solve that situation for them.
Yeah, that last bit you mentioned, it's similar to what the credit card companies are going through, where there's misinformation or not clear on the products. And then we get to credit card statements not having a clear description and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of similarities too, right?
Yes. And even when we consider the scenario of chargebacks, yes, there are no chargebacks because you need to wait for block confirmation. So it actually one of the pain points, depending on the cryptocurrency that we are pointing at, namely Bitcoin, because it can be so slow for us to be able to verify that the transaction will not have any issues. So it will not have double payments or anything else. So yes, it is an interesting market that we're able to solve these traditional issues, but sometimes it means that we need to adapt the way that we do it so that for the end user, it feels like the same. They don't need to deal with this kind of complexity.
Now, the timeliness of this conversation, I can't believe it, because only yesterday PayPal announced that they're going to get involved with crypto, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and a whole bunch of others that they're going to be accepting within, I think, the next few months. And then in 2021, they said that they're going to allow merchants to, or customers to pay on the web with PayPal with crypto. So that's a massive announcement. And obviously Bitcoin went up as you would expect. So let's look at your solution and what is UTrust? What are the key features of it and benefits of it to businesses? And what makes UTrust different to other crypto payment processors out there?
Sure. I think the scenario of PayPal is extremely interesting because even though they announced that, it's really important to point out that it is not the same with UTrust and other systems, because what they're doing is they are offering the possibility of people investing into a currency that they can use, but they cannot use the cryptocurrency. They cannot use it on the blockchain. They can use it as an investment, just like it would be if PayPal announced that you can now start buying gold and at any moment you can convert gold to make a payment. Even some of these things are still not that clear based on their announcement, but still it is a massive thing to bring wider adoption. So where your trust comes into play and the differences is we really aim to be wallet agnostic. We aim to be a solution that serves everyone. So it serves regardless of where you want to keep your funds. Is it an exchange? Is it an owned wallet? Is it anywhere else? So we don't force you to use our own product to hold your funds. So if, for example, you'd have PayPal funds and they would allow you to withdraw from there, you would be able to use our solution as well. So it is something that we try to aim for everyone. The second thing is that we provide crypto agnostic experience for merchants. So we don't force businesses to know anything at all about crypto or about blockchain, either to integrate or to handle our dashboards. They don't need to see crypto at all. So we really aim to have for them the same experience as they would have with Stripe, PayPal, or any other kind of solution. It is something that we understand that is really important to bring wider adoption, which is something that a lot of other providers in crypto are not offering because they're aimed for the early adopters that understand the benefits and know crypto. So we really want to have the simplest experience. And that's the second differentiating factor. The third one is, as we talked about, the buyer protection. So we try to protect the customer, namely through an automatic refund process, which we do the exchange at the moment that you got a refund. So for example, if you pay one Bitcoin now, which is worth $10,000, and in 6 months, it's worth $20,000, then you'd get two Bitcoins because the value changed. And we do that exchange on the moment that you get a refund. So this is just another of the steps to protecting the customer. Then another one would be this customer experience and customer happiness. So both with buyers and with merchants, we really strive to dedicate time to each of them to help them get PR announcement that they are now accepting crypto and that our solution is being able to customize to their current needs. It is a solution where we try to really aim to have the simple agnostic experience for merchants. And at the same time, for the buyers, we help them being able to use it wherever they are, wherever the funds are, and not have them create an account or use our own solution.
Yeah, a win on both sides for user experience. Not having to need an account on the buyer side is critical as time goes on, because crypto is going to have to compete with things like Apple Pay and Google Pay, and the days of entering addresses and things like that are fast coming to an end. Although you wouldn't think that shopping on a lot of websites still. But the forward-thinking companies are already there. So that's great. And if a business person doesn't have to understand anything about it, that's fantastic.
And this comes from our vision. So our current vision is to democratize payments with every transaction by leading the world to digital currencies adoption. So this kind of sums up what we're trying to aim to do, which is allow everyone to leverage these payments in a simple way that serves their current purpose. So obviously for buyers, they know crypto, they know blockchain. They want to deal with some of that. They want to have the ability to customize it. They don't want to be forced to use a separate service, because if you have money on a ledger, which is safer, you want to pay with the ledger, and that's fine. However, for the merchants, if we want to drive payments and worldwide adoption, then we shouldn't expect the entire e-commerce websites at the moment to start understanding crypto. It's unrealistic. So let's just create an experience where it's the same thing for them, business as usual. That's part of our value, business as usual for them. And they're certainly accepting crypto. So they are aiming and opening to a new market without having to learn anything new.
Yeah, that's great. Obviously, you've got the benefits of super low fees, so 1%. Which is very competitive when compared to, say, credit card processing fees of 2 or 3%. And it's super fast, obviously, once it's confirmed with certain currencies. But yeah, real time, again, is fast becoming the norm. And having to wait days or even hours for things to show up is not really going to be acceptable very soon.
So touching on that part of fees, it is very difficult for people to understand the amount of fees that they really pay. So obviously, if you look at the standard pricing for PayPal, for example, it would be 2-9%. But if the payment comes from certain countries or certain currencies, it's going to be different. then you consider chargebacks on some platforms as well. So you're actually adding more to the fees that you're paying. So all in all, it can go up to, like, I think from our latest studies that we were doing, depending on the platform and the countries, it can go up to 9% or 10% in some cases. So to have a standard 1%, that is 1%, never more than 1%, regardless of the currency, location, anything else, it is massive. And it is opening a lot wider platform as well and market that they can reach. So obviously in terms of speed, it is extremely fast from the moment that we detect, and then we can kind of customize. So sometimes we might be checking for more confirmations depending on the volume of the payment, if it's a lot higher and others shorter, but always within 1 hour, usually within 20 minutes maximum, it is done. In some cases, in some currencies that are more prepared for payments, it's going to be done in seconds, 1 second or less than that. It really depends on this. But for the merchants, again, they don't need to know that. It's meaningless for them. You're now accepting crypto. You're not going to get chargebacks. You're going to pay 1% and never more than that. And that's great. That's where we are solving problems. But it's important to know that we are not replacing fiat providers. So fiat is not going to go away within the next 2 years. That's not the plan, and that's not needed. But we are complementing the solution. And all of us believe, obviously, in the crypto space, that the percentage of payments going through crypto is going to become bigger and bigger percentage-wise compared to the ones in the traditional currencies. But we are not competing with fiat providers.
Yeah. It would be good to understand the business user experience, what that looks like. So let's talk about how a company can get started with your solution, the setup time, the technical difficulty, and just explain that process from phoning your company to taking the first payment, that whole workflow.
Yeah. So it depends whether we have a plugin available for their specific platform. If we have a plugin available, which we do for quite a few, a large percentage of e-commerce platforms, namely WordPress, for example, it's one of the biggest ones, and we are exploring others as well. But if we have one of these plugins, the experience to integrate is literally 5 minutes. So
that's things like WooCommerce, Magento, you've got Presto Shop at the moment. So that's all API-based.
Yes. And we added OpenCart, and we are adding a few more as well as we go along. So with those ones which connect to our API, but you don't need to have any technical experience. So all you need to do is you go to our platform, you add the plugin, and it's done. You just create an account on our platform, which is like password, email, some basic merchant information like merchant name and website, which we need to display for the buyer. Then you're accepting crypto payments. Nothing else is needed. Then before you are able to get your payouts, you will need to pass through KYB. But you don't need to do that to start accepting payments. If you are going to get paid at the end of the month or at the end of the next week, you have until that time to start filling out KYB. If you prefer, you can only start doing it after you get the first payment, and that's fine. So in those cases, it's 5 minutes. In the ones that we don't have a plugin available, we provide a public API that anyone can connect to, which has both the payments side of things and also our merchant's dashboard experience. So if you want to customize the whole way, so if you want to build your own dashboard, you can do it because we have the public API for that.
That's a brave person that will do that kind of thing nowadays, or only a big company. It's really only for enterprise companies, really, let's be honest.
Yes. Yes, it is meant for enterprise companies. So if you have a system that you have 100 different people doing things and you have a specific way of handling that, for example, if you have only some people who can approve refunds and you want the process to happen that you send an email before a refund is approved, we provide that solution for you. But yes, it is just for enterprise ones. Though about custom integrations, straightforward, it's just 2 calls. It's just create an order, not more than that, and check for the statuses of that order. So for that one, it would require some technical experience, obviously, but it's still something that could be done in like 30 minutes, 1 hour.
That's very fast, just overall. Unless you're doing some kind of custom setup or you're a big corporation, it sounds very simple and quick. I saw that you are looking at introducing Utrust invoicing as well. It's in beta right now. How beta is beta? Has it been a few months or weeks, or when's it looking at launching?
Yes. So we have some users currently using invoicing. It is a solution that is ready for everyone to start using. the reason why we are not doing that right now is because we want to improve the experience with payouts and settlements. Although the solution about invoicing is currently ready for us to activate for everyone, we already have dozens of people using invoicing. Before we launch it to the main market, we want to improve the frequency and process of the payouts. So we understand that compared to handling orders, where you might be okay with, in a lot of cases, depending on your volume, waiting for until the end of the month, so you accumulate the whole number of payments and then you get the payout. In invoices, sometimes it might be that you get an invoice, you get paid once, it is a large ticket already, and you want to get paid in your bank account immediately. So we don't feel we are fully solving the problem until we solve the problem of the settlements. And that's the reason why we're not launching invoicing immediately to the main market. So it is a lot about being able to understand these problems and being able to solve them. So even though invoicing is available, the full problem is not solved yet. And that's something that we plan to get out in the until the end of the year for sure.
So to clarify this, it's not that you've got a settlement issue in your main solution, it's just the invoicing side.
Yes, it is that the invoicing side is more demanding in the process of payouts. We want to ensure that it's fully solving the problem for them. So even though we have people using invoicing, giving us feedback, also gives us more time to improve the process for invoices, then we're able to launch both things together. An improved settlement experience that will provide them the best experience when they are getting invoices. That's why we are not getting that out there. Another thing that is important is that invoices is not just a solution that we are pointing out for the B2C market. It is also for the B2B market. So it is the first step for us to ensure that companies can start invoicing other companies. It also opens a different vertical for us. And it allows us in the meantime, even though it's better, we can do it with those partners because we're directly talking to them.
I would imagine that B2B would have been the first to look at invoicing. But it seems to suggest, you seem to imply that there's more demand from a consumer side initially.
No, it's the opposite. As you said, it is that businesses are the main side for invoices. B2B is the reason why we decided to launch invoicing. Although it can also be used for B2C, the difference is that for B2C, and that's part of putting it out there on the main market, we're not going to be talking to them individually one by one to help them through the process. It's meant for them to be able to handle it themselves. That's fine. What I mean is that even though it's better for the main public, it's not necessarily better when we are doing directly B2B side of things. Because in those cases, usually we are more involved. If it's a very large ticket size, we are going to be more involved and help them through the process. And in some cases, we have some examples of companies which are not that used to crypto, but are interested in being able to leverage the potential of crypto. In those, we're helping them directly get through that process.
Yeah. So let's talk merchant directories. That's something I've noticed that the Bitcoin payment world has kind of been at the forefront of for quite a few years. Although initially when the merchant directory started, they were quite thin in terms of the variety of businesses available to buy from. That's changing very rapidly. It's not just every Bitcoin merchant directory has a gift token retailer or airline tickets, which seemed to be the case for quite a long time, but it seems to be expanding to many other things now. So tell us about that. Is your merchant directory live or is it something that you're looking at bringing on?
So we have different things. So we are putting directories out there. We are every day almost, we are announcing partnerships and PR with different merchants that are getting live. We accept almost any of the industries. Obviously, in terms of marketing and sales efforts, we are focused more in some verticals, let's say gaming, travel, luxuries. One of the things that we understand is that businesses, in some cases, the actual reason why they want to get into crypto is because of the PR. It is because they want to get out there. And we are the first ones in our specific scope that are accepting crypto. And that brings them more customers. So it is important for them to feel that they are the first, even if it's in their specific area, in their specific city. Because each merchant, in a way, is specific to something. They are not all competing in all the user spaces. So the merchant directory is something that we're building, we're increasing on. And if you follow our social media, you'll see that like every day we're announcing different partners that are launching of our solution. So we try to do both things and really help them get out there and be understood and do that PR with the different merchants. So that comes into play. We also send newsletters as well with all the merchants that start getting accepted and approved. But it's starting to get into an area where there's so many that it's hard even to put all of them in a page. So I think if we have a page, usually it will not cover all the ones that are accepting crypto, but the ones that we feel are more confident on or have more sales on. But it is getting a larger and larger size of that. And we see that growth constantly. So every week or every day, it feels like more merchants start being onboarded than the previous weeks. And that is stupendous. There was a bit of slow during the beginning of the year because of the panic of COVID, but now it's picking up again.
That perfectly leads into my next question that I was going to ask, which is, what trends have you been seeing in terms of usage, not just with the COVID thing, although obviously you will talk about that, I'm assuming, but even what you were seeing perhaps in the end of 2019, what was the trajectory? What consumer behavior are you seeing?
Yeah, it is very interesting to start seeing that there's growth that is happening in a constant basis. And some of the reasons why I feel that happens is because, one, it feels like the industry is more stable. We are not seeing jumps as often. Obviously, we are seeing jumps, namely what happened in March, but that happened in the stock market as well. The price of Bitcoin has become more stable, for example. So even on the news, we hear less that side of scams and constant price fluctuations, which was the constant basis that happened before. So actually, in a way, I feel that the bear market helped in that way. There's another side, which is the crypto inflation. So in some industries, some verticals, so we are talking, let's say, Latin America and some specific countries, there is the opposite. The inflation and the way that the currency has become less stable than the generic cryptocurrencies. And I'm not even talking about the stable coins. It's just Bitcoin is more stable than some government-issued currencies. And just starting to identify that and seeing that one of their opportunities is to start getting into this space is one of the trends that I feel started happening more and more as well. And it is one of the reasons why this B2B side is interesting as well. So this invoicing side with B2B is specifically also interesting for these areas. Another thing is that because the industry has become more stable, more solutions are more stable, more PayPal announcements or other company announcements, the side of the confidence that people have in the cryptocurrencies and the legislation and compliance that follows with that, it means that even though some things become more restricting, it also means that it became easier and more concrete step for businesses to start doing that. Otherwise, they will start to feel that they are getting behind. So before it was, you're the early adopter, you're the first one doing this, no one else is doing this. And now, like, we're noticing that our main competitors are starting to accept crypto. Maybe we should as well. And there's still a lot to cover. There's still a lot of space. The e-commerce space is huge. Yes. So it is obviously not something that's going to happen from one day to the next. But it starts from word of mouth. It starts, it's the snowball effect. You get one, then you get another one, then it's two, and then suddenly you're getting 100. So I think these trends all combined, it is leading us to start getting the pace higher and higher. And I do feel like COVID meant that some businesses were forced to look into other opportunities and other ways of attracting customers. Because businesses became more digital, that was the first step. And the second step was, maybe we should export the new market, which is blockchain. So more businesses we start seeing were focusing more on e-commerce. That meant more development possibilities, more marketing possibilities, more partnership possibilities as well.
Yeah. And continuing on from the new markets and new customers angle, I think you might get to see what's happened in social media. So, you know, Instagram has certain type and demographic of user. Twitter has its own kind of type of user. Half of them are crazy, by the way, but That's a different conversation. And again, Facebook has another type. And I think you might see that in payments too. Up until, you know, recently, we've had the whole world was basically you either pay cash or it's Visa, Amex, and MasterCard. And it's been like that for decades. Now, what you might get is, I don't know, somebody between 30 and 40 might use X type of payment or prefer to use a certain type of payment all the time. Then the next younger demographic down might choose something else, and so on and so on. And you might actually get pools of different demographics that just prefer that one payment method. That could happen, I think. So we'll see.
Yeah. I think it's one of the best examples is stablecoins, in the way that when we compare this time frame, when we look at this time frame, the ones that raise the most volume are probably stablecoins. Like when we consider Tether, so USDT is tremendous, the growth that they've had during the past few years. So I think it also opens more easily that possibility for you first to start distributing your wealth. And so you might start, instead of having stocks or having and this comes from the yields and the bonds and the bank stability as well. And so all of that, the investment accounts. So things are changing in a way that it means that, as you were pointing out, youth and 20s, 30s, 40s, you're starting to notice that perhaps I should start distributing and putting wealth in crypto. And that leads to then maybe you're going to start, my best payment account might be based on a stablecoin in crypto, because it's not going to be as easily tracked what I'm paying for. While on the bank, you know that it's going to register that you bought something in a specific store and the government has access to it. And in crypto, even though there are some things which are becoming more clear that you'll need to identify, it is still something that is harder to identify, that you send to an address that's not recognized by anything else. So I do feel this trend of people starting to distribute their wealth more, putting crypto into that percentage. And that might mean that afterwards, if you're getting investment in that, you'll want to use it. Are you going to convert it back to fiat and get charged for that? Or are you going to leverage that percentage of your wealth and start paying with it? Because now you have possibility to do that, which you did not have before.
Yeah, I mean, that's personally what I've done is I've spread my money out. It's kind of nice feeling to know that a bank doesn't have a monopoly anymore on storing money. Actually, one interesting conversation I had, I was traveling earlier this year before the whole world shut down. I stayed in Germany for a few months. I went to a meetup, like a fintech meetup, just to see what's going on. And over drinks, I was just chatting to one guy. He had worked for a Danish bank in Frankfurt. We were just having this conversation. And he said, actually, you know, the terms and conditions in a bank says that your money's not actually yours. The bank can decide whether you can spend it or not. It just shouldn't happen. It's crazy. I mean, obviously, I'm assuming most banks have that, but it's just never used. It's just kind of a condition that's there.
Well, kind of, right? Because...
But you've been seeing more and more censorship, for example, over the last year or two especially. Credit card companies have blocked, almost like the tech companies are censoring people whose views they don't agree with their agenda. Credit card companies and banks are working in sort of unison with them to push that same narrative. And that's completely wrong, in my view. No one should have the power to dictate how you spend your money and who you spend it with.
These topics are interesting and complex, because compliance-wise, how should it happen? Because the thing is, crypto has no restrictions whatsoever. And when we consider that we are in a society that's regulated and needs to follow certain laws, and that you need to pay taxes in some cases, and being able to do that with crypto in a way that you will not be legally binding to those things. Is that correct? Is that good? Is that bad? Probably it's bad considering it's governments and considering it is something that is legal and those are standard ways of working with society. However, why should credit card companies be the ones applying those legislations? Are they actually following those legislations or they are pushing to their own personal standards? Are they blocking people because they don't want competition? They don't want them to move their wealth to another place. So it is conflicting. But even touching just first on what you were saying about banks, even if they don't have that covered on their terms and conditions or whatever, that is the bank's business model. The bank's business model is to use your money to invest for them. That's how they that money. That's why the easiest way of explaining it is you put money into the bank and they will loan that money to someone who might get into debt crisis and not be able to pay back. And then you have the crisis which happened, keeps happening in a cycle basis, basically, because they invest too much and they are loaning money for houses that people are not able to pay. So they don't recover the money. So suddenly they don't have the money. And so if everyone at the same time wants to withdraw the money from the bank, bankruptcy for the bank, and they will not have enough money. This happened in Greece. They needed to stop being able to withdraw. So it is the standard way of banks. But yes, I think the compliance side of crypto and the way that banks and credit cards were and have been blocking operations and transactions, it is complicated. And it's hard to identify up to where it's legal and up to where it's actually political.
Well, that's why you have the law, which should be that if you do something illegally, that's accounted for. I come from the more libertarian angle, which is don't break the law. It's simple. But yeah, that could be a whole podcast in itself, talking around the legal side of it. Maybe we'll do that one day. It would be fun, I think.
Yeah, fun is a fun way of talking about compliance.
Yeah, that's right. I can't imagine going to the compliance industry's annual Christmas party. That would be... Wouldn't be the most fun party, I don't think.
I don't think either.
So what markets does UTrust currently serve? I mean, Bitcoin effectively is a borderless currency, but do you find yourself having pockets of customers in certain regions in the world?
We try to be worldwide and offer solutions for everyone, but our focus is currently in the European market. That's where we're positioned, and that's where our network is more involved in. Even though it's a European market, we are not restricting in any way the buyers. So buyers might be paying from anywhere whatsoever. And it doesn't mean that we are not offering solutions in other parts of the world. It's just that our focus is there. The other thing is that as we're talking about invoicing, so our market is not just the B2B2C side. So not just on websites that are sending items and orders and shipping. We also are dealing with B2B. So we're also helping businesses leverage crypto and try to get money across borders, for example, precisely because crypto is borderless, as you're pointing out. So we try to leverage that and try to help their specific use cases. There's so many that we have been dealing with and talking with, trying to onboard them into the crypto concept, that they need to transfer thousands, sometimes millions across countries. It is very, very complex to do that in fiat. It's not just the cost. They can get locked and frozen for years because someone was not able to get certain information. You provide the information back and the entire bureaucracy of the process will mean that everything is frozen. So that is another area that we are currently exploring. Recently, we combined our wallet with Hold as well. So we actually are boosting, we're going to be starting a credit card to pay crypto anywhere. You'll start being able to pay crypto anywhere with our card and being able to do crypto to crypto and fiat to crypto exchange. So this part of the market, again, focus in Europe, focus in being able to onboard more e-commerce, and still it is something going back to our vision of being able to democratize all payments. We are building an ecosystem that will be able to provide anyone with a solution and the power of crypto to solve their problems, be it by expanding the market that you have as a business to start accepting crypto, or be it leveraging crypto to get money across borders, or if you want to get into crypto as an investment, then maybe use your wallet. If you want to start paying with crypto anywhere in any store, then maybe get our credit card. So it is this build an ecosystem that we are trying to create in order to tackle that. But again, our focus is and has been on this payment gateway, on this B2B2C side, the e-commerce, and specifically on the merchants in Europe.
That sounds really exciting to have a whole ecosystem of not just payments, but stores, shops, merchants, investing, using debit card with a legacy financial system. It's, yeah, that sounds great. And it's way more than what banks have today and have had for years, right? I mean, they were just almost like execution only, whereas this is just turning into almost a destination eventually.
I'd hope so.
Yeah. A topic that I had to discuss was your recent announcement with the Hold app and the Visa debit card. Would I be right in saying that basically allows you, if you've got cryptocurrency in your UTrust account, your personal UTrust account, so we're not talking about the business solution, right? Mm-hmm. Then you can basically have a debit card and you can spend, and it will convert your crypto to fiat currency in real time for you to spend it.
Yes, that's the gist of it.
Okay. And Hold is the app which holds your actual cryptocurrency assets. So your debit card's linked to that, is that correct?
Yes. So Hold is the app that you can get onboarded to crypto, you can buy crypto, you can exchange crypto, and that comes with a card that will enable you to use the funds that you have on that card, the crypto funds, to pay anywhere with them. We are launching that in the next couple of weeks, hopefully next week. It comes with a lot of things. It comes with the token strategy. So it provides as well usage for our community in using our own token. So it is not something that we need everyone to do, but the ones that invested in our community, they also get some ways to get more funds from our own currency. So we provide a utility to the token as well through Hold application.
Is that linked to the staking?
Yes.
On your app? Maybe to some of the listeners that aren't familiar with staking, and when you mention your token, what does that all mean?
Yes, it is a complex way of explaining to other people. So I'm not sure everyone will be able to understand. But I think not even going into detail about the staking, it's more that the crypto space has thousands of currencies. It is not hundreds, it is not dozens, it's thousands of different currencies. A few of them have very different ways of processing. So when we consider the different blockchains, so Bitcoin is a blockchain, it is has a specific mechanism. When we talk about tokens, when we talk about currencies that don't have their own blockchain, which is the case for our own, for example, UTKs, they use the system of Ethereum, takes 1 second per block, then token would be the exact same thing. So to provide uniqueness and opportunities and usage for the token, there's different ways that you can do that with. But staking overall works like a savings account. There's different ways of powering it. It might be through payments, it might be through specific usage, might be just time, might be based on the amount of tokens that you have. But in the simplest form, then the best way to explain it would be similar like a savings account. So the longer you put it there, the longer you can get more funds as well. And if you do that, considering that the currency is going to raise in value as well, which doesn't happen with the fiat currencies that often or barely at all, then you're basically doubling your means. So you're both getting more tokens and the value of the tokens is raising because you're doing specifically that system of savings. But yes, there's more concrete ways and more details of this process, but I think this is the easiest way of trying to explain it.
Thanks for that. Appreciate it. Okay, let's move on to the biggest challenges right now in your company and moving on to sort of what your company is working on right now and for 2021.
Yeah, so until the end of this year, it is about being able to, as I talked before, improve our settlements process, make it in a way that it will also provide a more quick offer for invoices specifically, so that for invoices, you're able to see your information easier, that you're going to get paid a lot quicker as well. So it is about that. It is about combining and embedding these different offers of our ecosystem that we launched recently, namely Hold, which is powered by UTrust. So being able to connect as well these systems more clearly. So until the end of the year, we're basically stabilizing this news that we sent. So we are updating, we are based on feedback, we're launching these different things. So we are connecting all of that. 2021, hopefully, and that's what we're going to be working on, it's going to be big in the way that with this ecosystem already established and with a couple other things that we're exploring as well, it means that we will have the tools to tackle an even bigger market than we did before. With the many use cases and examples that we have been able to gather as well throughout this year in merchants, it will boost as well the way that we can tackle new ones during next year. So this year, we started gathering in different verticals, launching different products, We were able to get that feedback. We started embedding that feedback. So next year is the year that we really want to grow a lot. That's why this year, until the next couple of months, is about being able to stabilize. So we then can really tackle the growth in terms of merchants, in terms of business overall. Our main challenge, I'd say, is the ecosystem is large and different. It is hard to choose the right things to focus on and where we really want to enhance. If we put everything that we had in the payment gateway, would it be a better option than having credit cards and having an app and et cetera? We try to tackle this by having these different partners, combining different projects. Still, I do think it's the main challenge that we do have. It is about being able to go through these different areas and choosing our right focus. But even though it's the main challenge, it's not a blocker. It is not something that's going to slow us down. It's just something that we really need to be aware of. Because of that as well, it is possible that next year we might choose a few couple strategic positions as well. So hiring a couple strategic positions to help us get these things out there even more. That's as far as I can currently share. Obviously, the next 2 months as well are the time that we're going to be working on our goals and our plan for the next year. So even internally, it's still one of the jobs that we need to do the next couple of months.
Well, it sounds like you got some awesome stuff planned and wish you all the best success. I'd love to see that and follow your progress. I think I agree. I mean, one of the big things that the crypto industry has to do, and this just goes for any business in my career experience, marketing. And that doesn't mean just plastering your logo everywhere, which seems to be what most people think marketing is. It's got to be a real grassroots every day, day in, day out, especially social. If you look at so many companies, big ones, their social presence is terrible. And it doesn't mean just posting every day. You've got to post something that's useful or interesting. So many companies fail at it. It's unbelievable. So yeah, I think the crypto industry's got to do a big marketing job, not just talking about the tech, which I know is very easy to fall into in crypto because it's an exciting space, isn't it?
Yeah, it is something that I do feel as well that everyone tries to do because it's exciting. You try to get it everywhere. But still, I do feel we kind of are in a bubble often. So because all of these projects, we have these communities. So we have this massive amount of investors that is around that. And it feels like army sometimes. So it feels like they are fighting to help you across Twitter, the madness of Twitter when it comes to that. So it's a bubble because when you consider the wider space of the market, even though it might seem like you're everywhere, you might just be everywhere in crypto because you know the things that are happening in crypto. We all follow the news in crypto. We all know the big projects and the big things they launched outside the crypto space. Nothing comes out. What comes out is Bitcoin went higher. Bitcoin went very low. And there was a scam and there was a hack. And I do feel that's one of the challenges that we have in the industry more, even though it has been improving. You don't hear news about the crypto projects on your TV, on newspaper, on the outside news. You see it on the crypto news. Sometimes I feel we believe that we've reached a lot wider space than we actually did because of this bubble.
Yeah. That's actually one of the reasons I originally wanted to start a business purely around crypto consulting, crypto podcast. And then when I really sat down and thought about it, and this was based on my experience in the IT industry, which was that over time, every company has so many different technologies stuck together with sticky tape. The same principles are going to apply. And you alluded to it earlier, which is that fiat's not disappearing overnight. It's going to be here for a long time. And there's a lot of interim solutions that are going to be here. Your debit card linked to crypto is one, where you're merging the two worlds together. But even just regular fintech for the regular currencies we use every day is improving all the time with the digital neobanks. So yeah, I took a step back and I thought I should just focus on helping people with information on accepting faster payments, whatever that may be. Crypto is part of that, but it's not a bubble. This keeps me grounded, I think, that having the variety of guests on this show keeps everything in check, I think.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting.
It's been a really fun conversation. Before we finish on some lighter notes, is there anything you feel that's important to talk about that I might have missed in terms of information for businesses?
The only thing I would like to point out is that starting to accept crypto might seem risky. However, the way that we try to approach it, and maybe perhaps I was not that clear before, is that you don't receive crypto, you receive fiat. So we, you trust, we do everything else. We convert it, we handle it, we receive it, we exchange it. So for the perspective of the business, you, in 5 minutes, start receiving, being able to tackle crypto users, but you don't deal with the compliance of crypto. You don't need to understand crypto, and you do it very quickly. So there's not really any risk. So starting to get into this market with a solution like the one that we offer should be riskless, should be straightforward. And so the decision of doing that doesn't seem to come with a lot of drawbacks. If it comes to worse and there's not any payments, just take it off. 5 minutes again, just click a button. If there's any questions, we are there to support. But I think it's key what we were talking before of the bubble. Sometimes one of the risks that we are facing and one of the difficulties that we face is that businesses are very concerned about getting into this industry. It seems like a dark industry. But part of the way that we build our solution is for them not to handle it. You receive your settlements and payouts in the fiat currency that you choose. If you want to receive in euros or pounds, you will receive in that currency. You don't receive crypto. We handle that. So that kind of takes away that risk and difficulty and the volatility as well. It comes from the fact that we try to provide business as usual since the beginning.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, if you just don't care about crypto, it's a perfect solution because you can get paid out in dollars or euros or whatever.
Yeah.
Excellent. So let's finish with some light questions. I'd love to know what you've been reading or watching over the last few months. I've read a really interesting book recently after seeing the author interviewed on YouTube, Jonathan Cahn. He wrote a book called The Harbinger. It was a very interesting book about biblical prophecy. He basically just explained how everything that was predicted and happened in ancient Israel is happening in the States right now. It was a very fascinating book. I'd never heard of the author until recently, so I'd recommend that to anyone that wants to read an interesting book. How about you?
So I've been trying to cycle on a couple topics. So I tried to have fiction, nonfiction, and one Portuguese book. The reason behind that is that I haven't read a Portuguese book in such a long time. But so the last one I read was Atomic Habits by James Clear. So that was part of the ones that are more productivity-based. Really, really interesting. Short, straight to the point, has sum ups at the end, has online research as well added, and some lighter notes. So it is something that was found very interesting. The way that he put it, he didn't felt like a guru or saying magic ways of creating the fantastic habits. It was, these are the basic ways of doing that. It's backed by research. There are some ways that you can try to enhance the way that you start new apps or cancel it. These are some examples. It might just not solve everything for you, but this is a way that will help you out. And if you want to read more, there's some ways here and you can understand more how to adapt your personality. So it was really well built, well structured, quick, straight to the point. So I do recommend that for anyone who would like to see something about productivity. I do feel it, so far it has been the most interesting and generic, but concrete as well, book that I've read recently. The one that I'm currently reading is a Portuguese book, which I'm trying to translate it. It will sound weird, but it's basically the machine of making Spanish. But I haven't got to the part of understanding what is this machine yet. And I don't think it's about making Spanish man. That's not the case. But it is by Walter Ugumain, and it's a very, very interesting book. And I do think it's translated already for plenty of languages.
Nice. The one book in Portuguese that was recommended to me a long time ago is called Maverick by Ricardo Semler. He is Brazilian, ran a Brazilian company called Semco. Have you heard of this book?
Not yet. I'm trying to find it.
It's very good. I'd highly recommend it. He talks about how he inherited, or he worked in the family business. It's an engineering company, I think. And he basically just burnt out as a CEO. And he completely re-engineered his whole life and ran the company a completely different way. And it was an excellent book. But yeah, it was in Portuguese originally.
Yeah, I've just opened it, which is interesting. So the original title is Turning Tables, not Maverick, just Turning Tables. Turning Your Own Table, that's the title.
I see. I didn't know that. I'd highly recommend that.
I'm going to add it to my list then.
Well, thank you so much. That was a fantastic conversation. I've learned a lot and I really appreciate it. And as a final note, where is UTrust online? And secondly, to get hold of you personally, if they have any questions, where's the best place to get in touch?
Go to utrust.com. Best way, if you want to see documentation, it's docs.utrust.com. But you have all the links in the main page anyway. To reach me out, it's just my name together in Twitter. I think that's the best way. So Martin Guaragão in Twitter. I have quite a unique name. So if you search my name, you'll find too many things, to be honest.
I'll put your Twitter link to your profile in the show notes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. And thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and subscribe to the Payments Show podcast to hear the latest episodes when they are released. If you would like to accept payments faster in your company, please head over to digitalmoneylab.com where you can find more information. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode.